And it is a great, great pleasure to introduce Nikki.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nikki. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would like you to observe that my daughter worked very hard to make me presentable this evening. She did not like these shoes, so forgive me if you don't like them. They were my own personal choice, not that. No, I am grateful to be here. So you talked about birthdays, and I just recently had a birthday for AA. So on July 1st, I turned 32. And so I have been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous since I was 15. I got here in 1985. If you're a person that likes numbers, the very first meeting I ever came to was a Friday night podium participation meeting, and we sat right here way back a long time ago. And my recovery has been played out in the room here at the 1600 Club. All of that, so I'm grateful to be here and be in a good place. So I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. I think that's important. I do not sponsor myself. I do have a higher power, and I check in every day. It's only taken 30-some years to get there, but I check in with AHP every day. So I feel really grateful for that, right? And I have women that I work with that I sponsor, and man, I am grateful for them. They make life. So they're like frosting. It's the best. So they don't know that I feel that way about them, but my family knows about it because they tell them that they're my frosting. So anyhow, I'm really glad to be here. I think that when I come to a meeting, and I don't know if you hear people talk about this, but like I have so many years sober, it's hard to really give it to you, right? Because it feels like I'm trying to jam 100 pounds of stuff in a peanut shell, right? Like, how do you do that? So the first thing I want to say is if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous and you're in this room and you're not sure about us, I wrote a note to myself before I got up here. It says, death, birth, marriage, divorce, school, no matter what. I made a choice when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I wasn't going to drink or use, and I don't, no matter what. There are lots of days since I've gotten here that I have not felt empowered about that, or like that was a good idea, but no matter what, I don't drink and I don't use, and I can say personally that I've lived through all of these things, and I'm able to, so it means you are too, right? Because I'm not really that special. I used to think I was super special. But now I know I'm not that cool, and if I can do it, you can do it. So I wanted to make sure that no matter what, when I leave here today, I will feel like I've given you a positive message that you know that no matter what happens in your life, if you're here, you can stay sober. I will tell you that I'm one of five kids. My dad had been married, and he had four children with his first wife, and then they got divorced. But so she kicked him out, and he found my mom. My mom is 17 years younger, or she was 17 years younger than my dad. She should have known something was wrong. She met him in a bar at 6 a.m. But they fell in love, and they got married, and he didn't want any more kids, and she did. And she was a child bride, so he felt like he better do his duty there. And they had me. And I was a big disappointment right away because he wanted a boy. He already had a slew of girls, and he didn't want more girls, so their way wasn't good to start with. And I was an odd duck right from the very beginning. So I love those people that are like, they're cheerleaders and cool and beautiful, and I'm like, woo, but no. No, I don't relate to that in any way. I was not cool. I was always sort of dumpy and fat and weird and pimply, and I don't know. I was just not cool right from the very beginning. And I would watch. This thing would happen in my house. So if you can understand this and relate to it, wonderful. If you can't, I'm sorry. So my dad said, hey, get me a beer. I'm 50, so we didn't have remote control. Then we were both the dishwasher and the remote control. So he'd say, hey, give me a beer. And you go, okay. And you'd get the beer that you, but if you were the slave labor, you could crack it and then give it to him. And I was totally fine in 1970 or something. So that's, you know, and I didn't think anything about that was weird, right? That was normal. That was our house. That was not at your house. And he didn't think it was weird. He thought it was fine. And he'd giggle, like if you had a little too much of it, he'd be like, hey, give me my Budweiser. Oops, there it is. right? But what I saw was, I think I figured it out later, not then, but what I was seeing was, alcohol was really important to that man, right? And it had the conviviality. I love our big book says something about conviviality, right? And I loved what happened with alcohol. He had a good time, made him happier. That was a good time to ask for things, by the way, too. But it led to a lot of tension, too. So he could always miss the mark if he'd get drunk and fall down. My mom would pitch off. My mom born died of a little Al-Anon, so I know a lot about that, too. So this is the example. Why do I talk about that? Well, what I have figured out is that alcoholics have family systems that oftentimes will repeat themselves over and over and over. So I was raised in an alcoholic, like, pickled family, and there was a lot of violence. And I will share with you that I am the product of a very, very violent home. My dad was arrested for child abuse when I was a kid because he beat the crap out of my brother so bad that he had to go to the hospital. And frankly, my brother never came home again. So if you can't relate to that, good for you. It's crazy, Miles. So, violence. Fear. I want you to understand, like, before I ever got to the point where I was, like, truly, like, cognizantly thinking about drinking alcohol, I was afraid. So, like, when people talk about drinking and using, I think about that, and it's, like, interlaced with fear, right? Fear of what was going to happen next, where was I going to go, how did I look, what did you think of me? All of those things were deeply in my soul important. But they were very caught up with alcoholic behaviors, too. So the brother moved on, and he didn't come back. And they let me stay because they said, well, he didn't beat the crap out of you, so you get to stay. Okay, thanks. So I stayed in the home. I can tell you that something hasn't been wrong with me right from the beginning. My thinker was not right. I could see that I could probably work harder in school, right? But I couldn't really bring myself to do it, right? I'm not doing it. I should probably do the chore that my parents said that I had to do, but when did the chore happen? When you hear the car in the driveway. You run into, right? I get a lot done in like 35 seconds. Boom. But other people, like normal people, can kind of tell themselves, oh, I'm going to get in trouble if I don't get that done, so I'm going to get that done right now. Right? That's what I've heard, anyhow. Not my experience. So, I could not bring myself to do the things to change the behaviors that I was experiencing right from a very early age. I also didn't have, like, other people are that smart. I was, like, not smart. I would do things and get in trouble. So, my dad was a horrible drunk, and he would get violent, so I figured alcohol was the problem. So then when no one was looking, I'd pour it all down the drain. Like, that was going to make it better. And then also, like, somehow I wasn't going to get caught. Let me just say, they didn't like it when you poured their booze down. That was not a good move. Yeah, I got in a lot of trouble. So there, I just couldn't think straight. I couldn't see the consequences were a-coming for me. And then it would be scrambling and excuse-making and lying so that it, you know, so it didn't fall on me. Like, oh, no, stop lying, do it. And sadly, that was a little pattern that carried through my life. I, like, you know, we all have these invisible baggage that we take with us wherever we go. Here I come. And, like, not wanting to take accountability, not wanting to be responsible, not wanting to tell the truth. It was in my little baggage of goodies when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't know that. It was you people that turned me into a liar. Because I didn't know that's what I was doing. So anyhow, what happened for me is that I wanted to start having a good time. And this actually is key. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to have a good time. I wanted to check out. And I didn't like the way I felt. So I know a lot of people come to meetings and they share with you their experience, strength, and health, and their experience is really funny and amusing. Mine is sort of not that amusing and funny. Like, I would do stupid things. So one of the last few times that I will say, with all due respect to Alcoholics Anonymous, drugs are a huge part of my story, and so I can't just leave them out because they are together, right? So that's a part of this deal. So I would drink because I liked the way I felt or the way I didn't feel anymore, depending. I was always looking for that numb zone, right? And sometimes I'd hit the mark and have a great time. Woo! I was tall and thin and beautiful and graceful and fun. And, but like that didn't happen very often. A lot of times I'd miss the mark and stuff. Other things would happen. I had a deep sense of not being good enough or attractive or beautiful. And I know we have some gentlemen in the room, but ladies, you're my people. It's really difficult to be short and fat and ugly and feel gross about yourself and then not be able to attract the gentleman's attention or whatever. And so I would drink because I would think that would make that better. But then I didn't act as I didn't act like a lady. So now I am not good behavior. And it was embarrassing. Oftentimes not in the moment though, definitely. Later, though, embarrassing. So I would do things. Like, I was told once that I don't identify strongly enough as a true drinker, so I will share this with you. I get my girl Leslie. We're going to go drinking. We're like 14. And I'm like, let's go. And we're like, we're going to Bible study. And her mom's like, praise be to Jesus. And I'm like, so we take off and we call this guy. And we're like, dude, and he had just gotten a Firebird. Oh my God, that thing was sexy. So it was blue. It was badass. He takes his step. He's like, I got a party. And we're like, we're coming. So we get in his car and we show up at the party. And I actually would do this all the time. I would get in over my head, right? Like, and but then I can't show you that I'm scared or intimidated or weighing over my head because you'd be stupid then. So you look foolish, so I'm not going to do that. So we get there, and there are people, like, doing lines on the tables and some people in the back room doing some other things. It's just craziness that the people in the kitchen were laughing loudly, and they had the funnel and the tube and the keg, right? And people are drinking, and whoa, oh, yeah. And I'm like, let's try that. That shit looks dangerous. Like, I'm going to die if I do that. I'm going to do that. So I spend the time in the kitchen. Well, who's out there? The fellas. That's not good. I should have gone home. So I stay in the kitchen. I'm getting rowdy with them. And I'm kind of short. So, like, they're all taller than me. And they're like, hey, what? And I, like, go upside down on my head and freaking, oh, God. Just so you know, beer will come out your nose that way. If you haven't tried that, let me just say, it hurts, it's not good, and it does come out your nose. So we are getting pretty drunk, but I'm still thinking I'm pretty good, right? My friends are like, oh, it's so good, and I was like, what is this party? And they said, oh, it's somebody's, you know, like a bachelor party? Do you really think a 14-year-old girl that's getting drunk in the kitchen is a good member for the bachelor party? Probably not so much. So this progresses and people are getting crazy and we're smoking a little marijuana or whatever, right? And then I'm getting like a little tipsy. But, and I'm a staggering drunk that always feels like I'm getting excited. No, I'm good. So they're like, hey, come on, let's go. And then they started talking about, like, oh, yeah, she's cute. And I was like, that's right. And then a couple of them were like, yeah, it's Silver Red. I'm like, yes, sir. But now the Silver friend that brought us in to take out Firebird goes, no. No, no. He's like 3 or 4 years older than us, and he's like, no, no, no. That one can't go with you. There's no. And I was like, don't be a downer. So pretty soon, he's dragging me out the front yard, and I'm yelling, come on, I'll take you all along. More am I taking them? No, we all know that's not good. But that was normal. So we get in the car, and he says, don't you barf in my car. And I was like, I would never. We hit a turn, that car just kept spinning. And everybody pull over and puke. And he's like, he opens the car, he literally kicks me out, and I throw up, and this lady's Nancy, I actually know her, in her yard, and then was like, passed out in the park, in the yard, and people are like, oh, you drink normally? Yeah, no, I normally drink like this, so. I will say that I do identify with alcoholic drinking. I just assume that you all know how to drink, So I don't usually spend very much time on it. But my friend Lee said you should really identify. So if that doesn't sound alcoholic to you, talk to me later. Maybe clear that up. But that was fun. I will tell you, later that evening, my friend Leslie had gotten as inebriated as myself, that she was going to vomit. And I said, hey, wait a second. Let me get a trash can. And I put the wicker trash can on the bed and let her brush it. Wow. And we got in a lot of trouble. And I came to. This is another really important thing. I came to not wearing all my clothes in the middle of the street somewhere between Leslie's house and my house. Right? And I cannot tell you if I was going home or if I had been somewhere else and I was going back to Leslie's. I don't know. And that's a pattern. I would like to say that not the clothing part too, but that also. I always lost my bras and my shoes. I don't know where they are. If anybody has them, let me know. But I would not know, like, what happened. They'd be like, and I started to have this feeling like I wasn't really drunk because I remember what happened, right? Even though I was, like, staggering, but didn't count because I could remember it all. So I liked the blackout, though, because then I felt like, ugh, I got rid of all that. I don't know what I didn't work. But so that was set up a pattern for me. And I want you to remember that my drinking career is short. So some of you older people were able to really hang in there longer. And I am impressed that you could do it. Good for you. I could not. The last time I actually drank alcohol that I remember clearly, my sister and I got drunk. We were moving her house, and I was responsible to help take care of her children. And we found a lot of alcohol in the closet. I don't know what it was doing there, but we decided we were going to have some drinks while we were packing. And I will tell you, in case you haven't done this, gin and grape Kool-Aid. Yeah, no, you'll throw that up too. And we got really drunk, and I was supposed to be responsible for taking care of these kids, and I checked out, and I was not able to help take care of those kids. And I think that I take a responsibility in the fact that those children grew up seeing us drink. And I can fast forward and say that those kids, she had two kids, their names were Deborah and Joseph, and Debbie died, a full-blown heroin addict in Reno, California, and she was drunk and high, and she wanted to get a bag of dope, and she was arguing with her boyfriend about who would be the better one to drive, and she had less DUIs, so she got chosen, and she was driving home and lost control of her vehicle, and it rolled over on her, and she died instantly, and I can tell you that there are lots of times that I think of that girl, and I wonder, like, well, I have to believe that God has a plan, but I wonder how big a part I played in her alcoholism and in her addiction. And I know that I will always carry that guilt because of the actions that I took. And why did I get here and she didn't, right? I don't know. I could not tell you why. So drinking didn't work for me, and it was just heading downhill. And I was miserable. And I was young and miserable. But what happened is I was with my sister in Tahoe taking care of her kids and not so well. And in the meantime, my Al-Anon mother found Al-Anon. And she started having my boundaries and whatever. And she called me and said, so when you come home, some things have changed. And I was like, what are you talking about, Lewis? So I came home and she had like quit drinking. So she and my dad have been drinking partners their whole lives, and that was, I guess, cool. But all of a sudden, she's like, no, I see my partner. So she quit drinking with him, and then she was like, no. Some things changed with that, too, because she started marking his bottles. But he was my main source of alcohol. So that didn't work out good, because now, like, you know, they were hidden all over the house, right? Like, hidden behind the heaters, right? But now there's, like, this little orange mark. I got busted. I could, like, lift an alcohol off of him. Does anybody remember Laboris, the mouthwash?
No.
All right, so you get rid of the Laboris, and then you put the mouth, the stuff, yeah, okay. So I had it in my purse in my backpack all the time. I'd go to school, and I didn't draw sober breath. I'd wake up in the morning, and quite frankly, I would have a little shit off the bike. to get going, and then some alcohol, and then get going. I get to school, and every about 2 hours, like, you feed a baby, right? I've weighed intake some alcohol or some marijuana, and whatever. I was a little trash can, so, like, if you go, like, oh, this pills, I'd be like, I'm down, let's try. And, it didn't, like, it wasn't working, though, because I was feeling miserable all the time. I could not get high enough to not feel that stuff. And if you don't know what that feels like, I don't know why you're here. But anyhow, I couldn't get high enough. I couldn't get drunk enough. And so my family started going through this recovery program, and I went along. And what they said was, you know, if you can identify, you maybe have a problem with alcohol. And I was like, oh, man, I hate these guys. So I started coming to meetings, and I sort of dabbled with getting clean and sober, right? I liked it. You guys were fun. You laughed a lot, right? I remember that night when I came in here in 1985, and everybody was in here, and they were laughing and hugging and having a great time. And I am terminally lonely, right? I am terminally not part of the laughter, and I wanted to be, right? So I stuck around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know what I was doing, and there were a lot of blue-haired ladies. And back then, there were a lot of fellas that looked like they just left the military, like they were very uptight. And I was young, and so, like, I mean young. 15 is young, guys. And people look at you and they say things to you when you're riding Alcoholics Anonymous at that early age. They say things to you like, well, honey, I spill more beer than you drink. And I remember it, like, I got sassier, and I'd be like, well, maybe if you didn't spill so much, you'd got here sooner. But the other part of this is, I say that I loved the laughter and the fun and the camaraderie that you guys had, but I was pissed off, okay? So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had, like, half a shaved head, I wore Doc Martens and mini skirts, and I had, like, craziness and big old crazy eye makeup, and I was angry, kind of had like a mole hockey thing. I was pissed, and I would yell, "Stop my dick!" In me, like, they'd be like, "Do you have anything to share?" And I'd be like, "Stop my dick!" And they were like, "Well, thank you for sharing." I spent a lot of years being told that I needed to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. And I get it now. I didn't get it then. I felt angry, like, really. I was already pissed, and then people here were like, didn't like my vibe. And I'd take it into my face and say, I just was done. I was, thought I was special, right? I was so pissed off. But remember, I feel broken and lonely inside. So I'm looking for something. And no, some of you had it. Some of you had this, like, cool thing. And I wanted that. But I didn't know how to get it. And you use words like acceptance. What the hell are you talking about? It was like, I can see nothing. What are you saying? And I didn't understand it. Now, I'm going to say, when I look back at 50 compared to then, part of that may just have been that I didn't understand that word. Right? Dictionary might have been good, but it was a very foreign concept to me. Like, they were saying things like, you need to accept what you don't, you know. I can't do that. And they talked about, like, you know, paused and agitated, and they had, like, all these little sayings, right?
Yeah, no. No.
What I did was, I came out to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found all the cutest boys, and had a lot of research on college. I really was a little a floozy, so that's the truth. And I had a lot of problems with this. I had poor behavior and a bad attitude, and I was super angry. But I was a victim, don't you know? I was a victim. I was never responsible for any of the things that was happening to me. And so eventually, like, that catches up with you. So if you're like me, it took me about 10 years for that to catch up with me. Now, I want you to understand, I was coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for the entire time. I had a sponsor. Look, I had service commitment. I did all this stuff. I just didn't have that thing in my gut that connected me with, like, Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't know how to do that part. So if you're new in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to give you the abridged version.
It's in the book. I don't mean to be a drag, but it's in the book, and gets a 12-year-old. That's just a miracle.
So, when I finally understood, like, I had a sponsor, I called her up. Now, I want you to understand something else, too. Just because you get to AA or NA does not mean that you're going to make great decisions. Okay? Yes, now I am not putting alcohol in. Now we get to see what insanity looks like without that. So I made a lot of decisions, right? Honestly, the worst stuff happened to me once I got sober. I got started going in the pools, and I'd be fighting in the pools. I got my bridge busted at the billiards. Sober, because I don't know how to shut my mouth, right? I don't know how to live. I'm just not drinking. Oh, man. Not good. So, pool fall, brawling, I mean, like, really awful. Sexual behavior was not acceptable, like, right? It was good. So, then something has to happen, and I'm going to tell you. This is my own little private secret. The truth of the matter is that eventually I had to hit a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous that made me go, I want to die. And I don't just mean I want to die. I mean, like, I need something to change now. But I'm always looking out there for the thing to change. God bless my sponsor. She was like, I think it's time for some step work. And I was like, oh, God, I hate you. So it took me a long time. So you're probably all very much smarter than me. That's great. It was like foreign to me to put that into use. So to me, there were words on the paper that we read in these meetings, right? We tend to believe that power greater ourselves to restore us to sanity. What sanity? Well, fighting in the pool, stone cold sober for no apparent reason, and still losing the bronze shoes is not normal. Okay, right? So I had to start changing my behavior, and I had to start making a little room inside for AA. I don't know how else to explain it to you. So it took a long time, right? And I watched other people be amazing. Now, there's a woman I talked about, and I can't talk about her without crying. She was so fucking kind. And she was salty, but she was kind. And she invited me to coffee. Now, I'm going to tell you, my homegirl, her name is Jenny. And she was the most regal, beautiful, put-together, white-haired babe I've ever known. And she was so nice to me. Then I did not understand what she was doing. And now I feel like hitting her up and being like, Jenny, you are my angel. But she helped me because she could see. I think she knew. She knew that I felt broken and afraid and not a part of. She would invite me to coffee. And then I couldn't even be like a grown-up and drink coffee. I'd have to get like loopier and a side of pickles. Like. But whatever I did, she would still let me come over. And she would still interact with me. And she was not my sponsor. Literally, sweet Jesus, she was my friend. And she was in her 70s. And she drove a big old town car, and she, like, her nails were good, and she always had a lipstick and her stuff all put together, and she had what I wanted, right? Now, I don't know if you can understand that, but at some point, you're just looking to feel better, you're looking to look better. Like, she had this peace, and she was regal and beautiful and wonderful. Later, I went to be a bridal shower with her, and I found out that she was a little bit trashy, and that kind of was cool. Bam! Yeah, that was cool. And I can tell you that she gave me a bit of Alcoholics Anonymous in a way that other people didn't. Because she invited me to be a part of her life, right? She got the fellowship. So I don't know, like, you hear speakers and they're amazing and polished and they have this wonderful story to share with you. What I have is a bunch of weird, disjointed stuff, and hopefully it makes sense. But she understood what the unity and the fellowship of the recovery was. And so she knew that if she had invited the weird kid to come be sober, like, I don't know, that it might help me. And she did. By God, she did. You know, years later, she was moving, and she gave me all of her teacups. She had had a teacup for every year that she'd been sober, and she gifted those to me. And it's emotional to me because I don't know why, but it was monumental for someone to give a shit about me and have hope for me. I didn't have any of my own. And she gave it to me in the form of teacups. right? And I started trying to actually do it. So I'm going to share this with you. My life changed for real because Alcoholics Anonymous started getting into my core and started helping me change the way I live and the way I think. And that didn't happen by just grabbing the book. Like, I had to open it and read it and then apply it. Man, that's like saying I gotta go run a mile. That didn't happen, bro. So, I started doing it. She'd be like, I want you to read the first step and I want you to call me when you're done. And I really didn't know. I kind of thought the AA police were going to tell on me if I didn't do it. Now, I don't know who they are to this day, but I have this deep sense of like I needed to do the thing for the AA police to get me. So you say read the book and I go, okay, like I'll read the book, right? I don't know. And she was so cool. Anyhow, crazy but cool. And then she said, well, now you're going to write this or that. And I would do it again. So I just did it. So then one day I told her, I'm going to kill myself. And she said, well, sounds like you're ready for the fourth step. So the sense I want you to understand that I had internally is like I could not run hard enough, far enough, fast enough to get away. The memories, the fear, the doubt, the shame, the me knowing who and what I am and having to look you in the eye, I could not get away. And I thought, well, all right. So she had the book and she said, come to my house and sit down. And I was so stupid. So I just sat there. She's like, you're going to do this and you're going to do the thing. And then here's the paper and you turn it sideways and you make some columns and we're going to do one or two together. And then once I know you're good, you're going to keep going. And I'm like, I'm going to home. She's like, no, you're not going anywhere. I'm just going to sit there and I'm going to make dinner. And I was like, okay. So I started and we did it. And then eventually you're done writing, right? And so when I finished, she was like, well, now we're going to do our fifth step. And I said, no, thank you. Right? No, thanks. I'm not doing that. And she said, because, you know, you get here and you read that, and you're like, one, two, nah, three, you can keep that, four, no. Five? Right, like you just go through the list, you're not going to do it. So I was like, no, I'm not doing it. Now I want you to know, I have a magic magnifying mind. I found it, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it told me that I was special and unique and that what I had done was way worse than anything anybody else had ever done, so I can possibly say that stuff out loud. Right? And what she said is I would die if I didn't. And do you know, I had tried to kill myself. I skipped that, but I did try to kill myself. I ended up in the hospital. And I think she was right. Right? Like, I think she was right. So I did this step. She's a smart ass. She said, now we're going to ask God to be here with us. And I said, I'm leaving. I'm like, I didn't know that. And she's like, you have to meet her. She's like 4'11". Mean as hell. And she's like, what do you think? God missed all that? And I was like, ah, rude. But Emmett has a point. All right. But I was like so scared. Literally, she made fun of me. She went around the bedroom and she was like, hey, in case it's the FBI, taking care of her sister. I was like, talking to plants and stuff. I was like, you're such a jackass. But eventually, we sit down on her bed, and I was so full of shame that I couldn't even look at her, right? I couldn't. And so she said, all right, fine. So we turn around back to back. Like, somehow that fixed it. But we sat back to back. We invited God. I don't even know what God, but we invited God to be there. And then I started reading this stuff. What a drama queen. So I did it. And by the time we finished, we were picking up our kids at the roller rink, and I'm doing my fifth step in the car with the kids in the car. And they're listening and laughing, and she's like, we got a live one. But I did it, and I finished it. And I can tell you I drove home that night at like 2 a.m., and I left. I didn't know what it was. I felt this thing bubbled up from inside. And I don't know, what about like indigestion or something? I didn't even understand what it was, but it was like deep down in your gut laughing. And it hadn't laughed, guys, in a long time. I laughed at you, and I laughed in a condescending tone. And I laughed a nervous, fearful laugh, but I didn't know that kind of laughter. And it made it that day so that I could look you in the eyes. You know what? I've done some stuff. I don't have anything to prove, right? And I'm going to guess that if you're here and joining us in this room, you've done some stuff too. It's the way it goes. So I continued on my path. I would love for you to think that I had a perfect, beautiful, smooth sailing after that. I didn't. I did not. I got married. I had kids. I got very disassociated from Alcoholics Anonymous for a lot of reasons. One of those is, it's hard to have kids here, so my hat's off to Allison, because she brought her shorties with her, and I respect the hell out of that. And I had a really hard time bringing my kids to meetings. I was terrified that people were judging me and that my kids were too noisy, and so I didn't just sit out of meetings because I would just be a nervous wreck the entire time. And then, you know, that marriage didn't work out, so then getting a divorce. I gotta tell you, divorce and recovery sucks. If you haven't done it, it's not that much fun. I did not enjoy that. It was one of the darkest periods of my life. However, it was the springboard through which God put me on a new adventure. And I want you to know about that. So I started going to school. My dear sweet friend, who's actually here, encouraged me to go to college. And I believed that I was stupid and dumb and I couldn't do it. And I was scared to even buy a parking permit. Okay? I could not. And she said, I think you're going to be okay. Just do it. Right? Just like call the number and show up. And then just show up and then, you know. And it was literally baby steps. So I went to college at 40. And I was terrified. I didn't think I could do it. I didn't think I was smart enough. And I finished my first semester, and the counselor called me in, and they said, wow, you have a 4.0. And I was like, is that bad? Am I in trouble? And she's like, no, that's amazing. You did a great job. It's like a perfect score. And I was like, okay. And she said, we want to encourage you to keep coming. And I was like, I don't know about that. But at that point in my life, I had left a marriage that had a lot of difficulties, and I was on welfare. And I had my kids, and I literally didn't know if I was going to have the gas to get them to school every day. And I don't know that I've shared that much about that ever in this setting. So I'll just say it was a whole kind of dependence on God that I had never had before. There is nothing like not having the money to feed your kids, not having the gas to get your kids to school every day, not knowing how you're going to pay your rent, like, it's a whole different kind of fearful than I had experienced. And my people in AA said, you know, you just keep coming back, you know, no matter what, and you just do the next right educated thing. And I was like, oh, and I just kept showing up. No matter what, I did it. And I will tell you that it took me a long time. So I went there, and I don't really care what anybody thinks. I used the welfare system to allow me to get an education. And then I used that as a springboard to actually get a JOB, baby. And I started working, right? And I didn't know that I could do any of those things. Like, I was not employable when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I wasn't capable of having a job or paying bills or showing up for things consistently. But now, like, I'm a little boring. Like, I have a job, I go to work, I pay the bills, I take care of my kids, I love them. I don't talk about them enough, but the truth is, I have a 21-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 13-year-old. And I'm one of those moms that you see the meme about that's like, I live for them! And then you're like, you guys suck! Right? Like, I adore them, and motherhood is one of the most challenging things I've ever done. And I'm telling you what, if you're not guiding them with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're missing a really good adventure. I try to teach this stuff to my kids, and I'm giving it to them now so that they don't have to necessarily end up here later because they didn't learn that stuff, right? I give an example of what integrity looks like. I give an example of what honesty looks like. I am there to have the tough conversations and what the fun things too. Like, I'm not that fun, but I mean, you know, I try. I have been able to walk through things that I never knew I could do. My daughter came to me a couple of years ago and she said she'd been molested. And it rocked our world. And she knows that I talk about it, so I have her permission to talk about that. Wow. Yeah, her paternal grandfather was molesting her, and she finally came forward and said something. And so we did all of the things that you need to do. There's nothing quite like that that makes you doubt your higher power. Like, if you're real, God, how could you let this happen to my child? And I will tell you that in my recovery, I have struggled at points with asking God, what are you doing? Like, simply, I don't trust you. Me and the big, magical sky daddy are not always on the same page, but the truth of the matter is that it's not for me to be on the same page. It is for me to get humble and get on his page. And I'm always not too spontaneous. I'm not always sure how to get there, right? But I was able to show up for my kid, and I will tell you that I heard a lot of people say, oh, if that happened to me, I'd kill him. And I, you know, like, I would do this and I would do that. And I thought, oh, you haven't been through this, have you? I wouldn't do anything that jeopardized her trust in me to come to me and share with me her pain. And you know what? I get to show up for that today. Why? Because Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps have taught me and created in me being a new creation. Okay? I don't come to AA and stay the same sick, warped, not good 15-year-old kid that got here. I get to grow and learn and morph and change, and I remember what it is to be that. I know. At 19, I took off and joined the carnival because I found Mr. Wright, and I called my sponsor, and I said, hey, let's do this. And she was like, I'm going to give you some time to think that through. I know you'll make the right decision. And I hung up, and I was like, come on in! And off we went. And she went, oops, Miss Mark. So I know what it is to make mistakes. Life mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I know what it is to stay sober and walk through those anyhow. I know what it is to face things that are scary. But don't feel good. But I just suit up and I do it anyhow. Right? The thing I want you to know, the other little note I wrote to myself, the key, if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous especially, there are two things, and I know that there's really three, but I'm going to say two. Honesty. Okay? I have to tell the truth. Recently, I texted my sponsor and let her know that I was feeling a certain little way about something at work. Right? And I told on myself to her. Why? Because I have to tell the truth. Because if I don't tell the truth, I then do bad behavior that makes me feel like I want to drink or I want to die. And I don't want to be in my skin, so I can't even afford it. But guess what? I am one of the honest people you'll ever know. Because I don't like the effects produced by lying. It ain't good. The other thing I have here is willingness. Now, my first sponsor said, are you willing to run down the street naked? And I was like, I didn't say that. So I don't think that's a good idea. And she laughed. She thought that was funny. Do you know, it is the one thing, all these years later, that when somebody says, I think maybe you should make a vision board on this, I go, yes, ma'am. And I start finding the board and the glue glue and the pictures. I'm going to do it. Why? Because willingness has taught me that I take an action. This is busted. Ain't ever going to be right. So I take the action that is appropriate. And guess what? I get a little better. A little better. So those people that get to be a part of my life, I learn to quit everywhere I go. So like it's smaller now. Less people know all my intimate business. And that's more appropriate. I didn't know I could ever be like that. Right? So I'm grateful because recovery is a gift. And the truth is, I never felt worthy, okay? When I went to church, they would say, you know, God, he died on the cross and it's your sins and, like, he's here. And I never felt worthy. Like, ooh, don't touch me, man. That's not cool. I could not relate to that at all. I'm not being disrespectful. It's the truth. I couldn't get it. But I think that there's something here that has taught me. I didn't feel worthy. I still really don't. Why am I here in my niece Debbie-ism? I could not tell you. I'd trade. I would trade. But I get an opportunity every day to practice right living. And I tell the truth. I show up. I'm responsible. I'm accountable. I have integrity. Right? So that's just pretty words. They're a hard-ass way to live. Right? And I do it because I have to. Is it perfect? No. No, it's not. I will tell you, I hurt my husband's feelings terribly today. So I haven't talked about him at all, but husband number two is pretty cool. He's handsome and smart and he's employed and all that stuff. And way, way, way out of my league. I don't know how, I snared that fella, but he's great. I really love him. And I asked him not to come today. And it hurt his feelings. And I said to him, I can't do this with you there. And he said, I respect you, but I watched him go. Like, and I thought, I'm a jerk, right? But I don't do this. This is a special thing, to give the gift of your story to others so that they can know you. And I'm a crybaby, so I was a crybaby, and I tried to hide it by fighting and being a badass and drunk all the time. But the truth is I quit drinking and using, and I did all the work, and I'm just a crybaby. So, sorry! I have a life that I am deeply grateful for, right? I have beautiful women that I work with. They call me and they trust me and they share their things with me and I try to share Alcoholics Anonymous with them. And do you know what I found at the end of that? This is like the most important thing for me. I struggled with a concept of a higher power. I struggled with a connection to a God, right? I grew up in Southern Baptist and a Catholic church all the time because my parents couldn't agree, so we got them both. And so then I got older and I was like, Wiccan, yeah, right? So I just totally did something different. And then what I found, I went to a women's retreat, which is, should be miraculous all by itself, but I went to a women's retreat. I talked to this guy, and he's a priest, and I was talking to him about that connection with God. And I'll tell you this and I'll be quiet. I said, I want to have that thing. I see other people have it, right? And they look peaceful and happy and connected. And they have faith in that. My sponsor has that. It is so fucking attractive to me. That she has utter faith and intuition. Like, it's beautiful to me. And I want that. And I feel sad that I don't have that. And I'm like, hey, I've been here a long time. Does it come later? And Father Jack said, why don't you tell me about what you do have? So we talked about it, right? And what I learned was, I don't get God the way other people do. I think Jesus is cool. That's great. And if you find God that way, more power to you. However, where I found God was sitting with my girls, right? Listening to them share and knowing that I know Alcoholics Anonymous and I have utter faith in the program itself, that if I share that shit with you right out of that book, a miracle will happen in your life. I know it. Why? Because it happened in my life. Sorry. Oof. I am not brilliant, beautiful, smart, any of those things. What I am is willing. I am willing to do what my sponsor suggests. What the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, I am willing to do it. And the reason I have not drank and used in over 32 years is they said, don't do that. It doesn't work that way. You have to be willing to do this. Oh, fine. So I try. And it is an amazing gift to know that at the end of our conversation that I find the face of God. And I am very grateful. When my son almost died recently, trust me, it was terrifying. And I found the face of God looking back at me through the face of the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I am deeply grateful. And I think that if you're here, give it a try, right? Give it a try. You never know. it could work for you too, right? Thanks, guys.
Let's give Nikki one more round of applause.